the sun. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham, and with us today is our very own friend, Dr. Jay Soute, stand-in pediatrician. Lots of people loving Dr. Jay. I'm getting lots of feedback. We got, I'm going to start writing them down so I can be more specific and read the messages. If I'm being completely honest, usually if I'm responding to a Facebook message or a tweet, it's when I'm on the toilet. So,
Me too.
So this is from Jai CL is his name, which I think this guy has to be a rapper. I don't know where he's from. And then there was another guy who I was actually just talking to this morning via the Book of Faces. Let's see, Jai CL. Yeah, I got his right. And then what was this other guy? There's a cop. Oh, maybe that is the cop. Is Jai CL? I'm getting them all mixed up now. And then I got some tweets too. Yes, Jai CL is a cop in Canada who heard me talking about my high class underwear, and he had some of his own recommendations as well to send my way. And he said he loves the episodes with Dr. J. And then somebody tweeted me too. So good times. Good times had
it's
by
nice
all.
Nice to see that.
Yeah. So we're going to start off. We got parenting myths, and this is actually something that I researched that I can't wait for you to drop some mad knowledge and either A, validate me, or B, tell me how wrong I am as we go through this. But before we do that, I have an email here, and then did you post something on like the Staying Frosty page? You said somebody wrote something in? Oh, okay. Well, perfect.
Yeah, they asked about vitamins, I think, whether vitamins were necessary. I think that was the other question.
All right, let's do this one first. This comes to us from Andrew. He says, my 10-year-old son recently was at a friend's house where he was shown the trailer for the remake of Stephen King movie It. Have you seen it yet, Dr. J?
I haven't seen the remake. The original was enough for me.
I never saw the original. I was never really in. I went through a phase in like late elementary school, early junior high, somewhere in there where I wanted to get. I was reading the Stephen King books and was way into
never
it.
Never had that phase, Justin.
No,
never had that phase. No, no.
You're not a fan of the horror flick?
No, not really.
So I was watching Pet Sematary, and when the guy had his Achilles tendon cut by the dead boy underneath the bed, my mom saw that, and I was staying with her. At the time,
I believe his name was.
Who was
that? That one scared the hell out of me too. Pet Cemetery, or was it Cujo? One or the other.
Yeah, I feel
they
like
both scared me.
And they're both about the same time frame. But anyway, so she said, "You can't watch this; it's too scary." And then I don't know why, but that I wasn't freaked out by it. But that ended my Stephen King craze. But I did watch the new one, and it is one of the few movies that I don't think I would let my kids watch. Like they've been wanting to watch it. I was like, eh. I realize that clowns can be scary, but this thing freaked my son out so much that he is having trouble getting to sleep and he doesn't want to be upstairs by himself anymore. Him and his sister's rooms are upstairs. He used to get excited that he was getting the opportunity to be left alone at the house while his mother and I went for a walk around the block or two, or to the neighbors. But now he doesn't want to be left alone. He's trying to convince his sister to join him every time he has to go upstairs to get something. Me being the dad tried the man up approach and that didn't work. Then I remembered how Justin told his kids while watching The Walking Dead that these were just actors and they were just playing the part. I even Googled pictures of the actor who plays the clown and showed it to him, but to no avail. Anyways, after a month or so, it seemed to calm down a bit, although I think he is just getting better at stuffing his feelings inside. Last week, one of his other friends mentioned seeing the film, not even showing my son a clip of the movie, but rather just describing what he saw. And we were back to square one, not being able to get to sleep without me or my wife laying down with him till he almost falls asleep and keeping the light on most of the night. He says he realizes that it is just a movie and that it's not real, but he says he just can't get the images out of his mind. I tell him to think about other things, but he says his mind always wanders back and he gets scared again. Any advice for us on how to calm him down?
I don't know. I'm afraid of clowns, too. But, No, I think that kids don't like things with masks, things where they can't see their face, things where they can't kind of read their facial expression. And when clowns have paint on, they always look happy, but kids don't you know what's going on under the paint, you know? So Halloween, Santa Claus, going to Disney World and running away from Goofy, all are common, common things that the, you know, the things that cause the fear. The kids can't read the clown's emotion. And, you know, if they hit other clowns, they try to trick you, you know, they look, they're going to throw water at you, but it's confetti. They just, clowns don't give kids what they expect from them, basically. So, to help it though, you can't really force the issue because, I mean, I think if you do like a, you know, a man up or something, try to, you know, overly expose the kid to clowns to kind of break it, that just usually makes it, you know, worse because, you know, if it's a little kid, the fear is actually real and it isn't helpful to, you know, trivialize or tease the kid about it, you know, or laugh at their reaction when they're afraid of the clown, you know, you know, don't chastise them. Don't call them Freddy Cat or, you know, you're being silly because that just makes it worse. And you just have to, you know, encourage them, you know, little by little, you know, to sit on Santa's lap and, you know, I guess, you know, Barnum and Bailey don't have the elephants anymore. So there really is no reason to go to the circus, right?
Yeah.
So you have kids that are going to have unfounded fears. But then what happens is, you know what they call the fear of clowns?
What?
Fear of clowns.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
No, it's I think what they call it is coulophobia or something like that. I think it's called. I think it's coulophobia. Coulrophobia.
Coulrophobia.
Fear of clowns.
So all he's got to do is Google.
that's what I did.
So here's what my take on it. And I kind of sent him an email and said, you know, I'm not an expert or anything like that. But what I have learned from talking to psychologists on the show and in my own life. But Dr. Tina Payne Bryson, who was a guest a long time ago, she wrote that book, Whole Brain Child. And she talks about if you have a kid having what we perceive to be an irrational emotional response. Now, she's talking about in the form of like fits or getting incredibly upset at not getting their way kind of a thing. So I would imagine that these same tactics would apply to fear. The challenge, though, is that her thing is kind of dealing with kids that are a little bit younger. But I still think that you're still in the process of connecting that. What her thing is that early on, the emotional part of your brain develops faster than the rational part of your brain. Right. And that so as parents, whenever your kid is having an irrational emotional response, that really your job is to obviously stay calm and do everything you just said. So you don't want to mock them or anything like that. But you want to help make the connection to the logic. You want to help them use their logic to control their emotions or rationalize them at least and comprehend them and articulate them. And so what I kind of said was, you know, like what he was doing was showing the picture and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then I think the more that he can kind of talk about it without being ridiculed, I would imagine would help him to kind of move past this. Or do you think it's better just to avoid it altogether?
No, I think, I mean, it's something where if you don't address it, it's going to, if you don't give your child a chance to process it and figure out how to better, you know, react when they see a clown, they're not going to have any tools to be able to do it the next time they're confronted with one. So there's a therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, which helps, you know, you kind of reprocess the input so that you don't develop the fear reaction. And that type of therapy seems to be more successful than, you know, the exposure therapy where you keep exposing your kids to clown until they stop being afraid of them. You know, so, here's a clown.
Just randomly put one in the cereal box.
While the kid's sleeping, you put clown makeup on them so that when they get up in the morning, they now look in the mirror and they're a clown. You know, so that's probably not helpful either. But again, there is cognitive behavioral therapy, which really works with all, you know, all kids' fears, just to get them to reprocess the input so that they don't have as much fear when they're confronted with it. Again, it gives them, you know, tools to be able to confront it rather than just there's a clown and then you have your, you know, panic reaction.
I also told him that he should try to share a story of something silly that scared him as a kid. You know, I had a tree outside my window that I had an irrational fear of, just the way that it would move. And for some reason, just the shadow of the tree moving in the wind always made me think of somebody. What would I do if I just saw the shadow of a person up to my window? And sometimes that would make it hard for me to sleep at night.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. We all have it. I mean, I remember once I was out on the porch shaking up, you know, like a blanket or an area rug kind of thing. And my daughter, who was up in her bed, thought for sure that there were a deer with suction cups on their hooves walking up the side of the house to her window.
No. I found the question. This comes from Tom and from Facebook at the Staying Frosty with the Dad podcast fan page. If you want to join that group, all you got to do is do a search on Facebook for Staying Frosty, the Dad podcast fan page. And our very own Butcher Drew.
All right.
He runs that for us. And you can obviously Dr. J posts there. Rachel Wright, the sex and family therapist, and Kyle from WrightWellnessCenter.com. They post there a lot. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. Big congratulations to Jeff, who's looking at his first baby. And he put a little sonogram picture up there. So congratulations to him and his. But here's Tom. He says, are vitamins necessary in supplement form, that is? Kids eat healthy, but the wife is a vaporizer in every room. Tom, I love him. The kids eat healthy, but the wife is a vaporizer in every room. Wipe the doorknobs and what else can I worry about type. And it's been the person. and has been perseveration her over
perseveration. Yeah.
Oh, what is that?
Overthinking.
Oh, okay.
Thinking about it all the time.
Her over whether he's getting enough vitamins. So are they necessary, Dr. J?
Well, did he say how old the kid was? No. He didn't. But
I think his kid I want to say, because I kind of know him. He's been on the show a long time ago, but I want to say his kid is in like the 8 to 9-year-old range.
Oh, well, that age.
He's close to Jacob's age.
Extra vitamins. Sometimes, I mean, babies, newborns, they can use vitamin D if the mom is breastfeeding, although normally there's adequate vitamin D in breast milk, although the recommended daily allowance may not be met by breast milk alone. So now they're recommending babies that are breastfed get a supplemental vitamin D until they start solid food. So that at that point, it might be necessary. But older kids that go through, you know, little depressions in their appetite, you know, 15 months to 24 months, kids just eat one meal a day and pick at the other two and may not be getting in what parents deem necessary. So at that age, some supplemental vitamins are sometimes helpful. But if you have a kid who, you know, when they come in for checkups, we do a hemoglobin on them to check and make sure they're getting enough iron in their diet. And if they have a normal hemoglobin and they're eating well, there's really no reason for supplemental vitamins.
So even like vitamin C chewables or something to try to avoid getting a cold, those ones that, you know, focus like immune health and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I take a vitamin C in the wintertime from November to April. I mean, I don't know how it helps. And I take a multivitamin too, just because I know I don't necessarily have the best dietary intake in the world. So, but if you're seeing that your kid's eating, you know, his meats and his veggies and getting a little bit of everything, there's probably no reason. I mean, broccoli, you know, kid eats broccoli a couple times a week. That's probably better than trying to get a vitamin into him every day.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
Plus the vitamins you get from, you know, food sources are more easily and readily absorbed by the body and incorporated into what the body needs than artificial outside sources. So, you know, getting it through your diet is probably the best way. But if you have, for whatever reason, a diet that is not, you know, completely what you want your kid to be eating, and they do go through those phases, there's no harm in, you know, having them on a vitamin just to kind of fill in the blanks or put the cherry on top. But necessary? No, I think multivitamins and all of the supplements and stuff are, you know, just a way to sell things. And also, you know, the vitamin industry is not controlled like the FDA controls medications and such. So, you know, depending on what vitamin brands and they have different, you know, different ways they make them, and they don't have quality control. And sometimes you're, you know, it says 500 milligrams, but you could be getting 1,000 or 250. So there's a lot of gray area in the vitamin industry and the supplement industry, too, in terms of what you're getting.
You said how old the kid was. Is there, like, if the kid was a teenager, would you be more inclined to work in some multivitamin?
Well, teenage girls who started with their period sometimes have, you know, at least initially will have very, you know, heavy flow and lose a lot of blood every month. So oftentimes with the teenage girls, I'll recommend a, you know, a women's multivitamin that has some iron in it, depending on what their story is with their periods. But generally speaking, you know, the boys, they don't want the vitamins. They want the protein supplements and the things that are going to, you know, build up muscle mass and stuff. So, so it's not so much vitamins, but it's protein. And you got to be careful with that too, because you don't want to overwhelm your kidneys with too much protein. So, you know, there's a balance to everything. But generally speaking, I think if you eat a well-balanced diet, you're going to get everything you need without the need for any supplements.
And so then what about, let's say I'm playing devil's advocate and I'm his wife, and they say, well, it doesn't hurt. All it could do is help, right?
Right. And I would agree with that, too. But okay. I think the question was, are they necessary? And, you know, they can be given whether they help or not. It, you know, they fill in the blanks, I suppose.
The body will absorb whatever it wants to absorb and pass on whatever it wants to pass
on. But you also have to be careful about overdoing it, because right. the fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, and E can become toxic at high levels, too. So they're,
I remember like you talking, because I was giving like two or three of the vitamins. Like if my kid has a cold, I'll give him two or three of the vitamin C ones or whatever.
Yeah, that won't hurt. Vitamin C is fine. The body just pees out whatever vitamin C it doesn't need.
Exactly.
So.
And so, but you warned me about the D and E and A. Is that right?
Yep.
That you said that those, you can actually, they get toxic, like you just said. Sorry.
Yep.
Yep. All right. So nothing else. Did you just make a fart noise?
Did I what?
Did you just make a fart noise?
I don't think so.
Oh, no.
We'll have to listen to the video thing.
I don't know, but I thought I was having a moment of like, oh, what do I want to do next? Do I want to go into this or do I want to take a break? And then I just heard,
that's could funny. Have been me.
Well, I don't think it was your butt. I thought it had to be your mouth for us to hear us as loud as we did. Either that or somebody has found a way to get in on my internet streaming here and be a part of the show. By the way, if you want to call in, 877-222-8323. If you're listening live, you have a question for Dr. J. Again, you can call in 877-222-8323. But if you don't listen live, you can also call in at 877-222-8323. Put that in your phone and you can leave us a voicemail for me to play for the next time we're with Dr. J or for anything. I still have yet to have somebody. I don't know if people aren't doing it anymore, Dr. J, but I've yet to have somebody drunk dial me while out on a date night. I think that would be a lot of fun for us all to enjoy and for you to be able to do. But maybe people aren't just going out and getting hammered on their date nights.
Either that or the date nights are going really well.
Oh, and they don't have time to call. That's a good point.
That's right.
You know what? I would like for you to call in the middle of that if you're if your wife is okay with that. Man, that would be some interesting voice mailage, my friends. Before we get into parenting myths, I want to tell you guys about a fantastic new sponsor. They've been with us for a couple weeks. It's called Wink.com, WINC.com. Now, I don't know if you're like me and you know nothing about wine, but I know nothing about wine. And I've said it before that when I go to get a bottle of wine, whether it's for a party or mostly it's for my mom. My mom loves wine, but my mom loves Franzia, which is to me not wine. That is
that comes in a box, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct. That is alcoholic grape juice is what I would classify that as. But maybe, and here's the thing, maybe you liked it, but I like to spoil my mom when she comes. I want to get her a nice bottle of wine. And here's what Wink.com does, is I look through the grocery store and I usually pick a bottle of wine based on the price point and the label, which I realize after reading about Wink.com that that's completely irrational and stupid. So I'm choosing my wine based on whoever thinks they should charge the most and whoever has the best graphic designer. That's really right. What I'm saying. And sometimes I choose it by name if they're funny, which you could see a lot of them do that. Well, here's what Wink.com does. You could be a wine expert or you could be a wine idiot like me. You go to their website, you fill out what they call a palate survey or profile. They ask you questions not about tannins or any of that crap or any of that. All they ask you is like, do you like coffee? Do you like the flavor of blueberries? Do you like caramel? That kind of stuff. And then you say, yeah, I like that or that. And then they customize wine for you starting at $13 a bottle. So it's the same price you'd be paying at your grocery store. Shipping is covered. It comes to your house. And if you get it and you don't like it, then they send you another one that you love. It's a great service. And if you go to trywink.com/dadpodcast, again, trywink.com winc.com/dadpodcast. You get $20 off your first shipment. Try winc.com/dadpodcast. And these are great sponsors. They're definitely taking care of the show. And they'll send you cool wines, or you could just pick popular ones. Like they're right now, they're talking about a summer water rosé, which sounds delicious and divine as well. And the other thing I think that's nice about this is that, you know, it's hard enough to go to the grocery store if you have to bring the kids. And usually you're not really thinking about yourself when you go there. This is a way that you can kind of take care of yourself, have that nice bottle of wine that you could sit down and unwind at the end of the day and put in zero effort. Like you go, you spend 5 minutes filling out a survey, and then boom, everything else is taken care of and you live like a freaking king. But again, try winc.com/dadpodcast for $20 off your first order. All right, let's take a quick break.
The Dad Podcast, encouraging alcoholism since 1972.
That's true. I'm a big fan of – here's the thing. I think it's fair to say that I'm a big fan of healthy alcoholism. You know what I mean? Like I've had multiple conversations with parents, and it's so funny because it seems like a seedy thing. There are two things that are seedy in the parenting world. Number one is a real Coca-Cola at a kid's birthday party in Southern California. I don't know how things are going in New England, but I was at a preschool age party one time, and I think I talked about it on the show, and we found a Coca-Cola in the bottom of an ice chest that had been kind of left there and had a bunch of Honest juice packs. They're like the organic, watered-down versions of Capri Sun.
Yeah.
And so the Honest Kids juice boxes, and then somebody found a Coke, and the dad who found it was like, there's a real Coke in here. Do you see that? Look at that. And it was just me and him. And we genuinely were not kidding. We were genuinely like, let's go behind the bouncy house, because it was in the corner of these people's backyard, and just throw back this Coke. We were talking
about it in a brown paper bag.
Yeah. We were talking about drinking a real Coca-Cola as if it was doing cocaine. That's exactly how we handled it. And number two is how much it makes you just a little bit more mellow to have just a pop of some booze. I've had days where I just have a couple shots of tequila, and it just lightens me up a little bit when I'm getting frustrated with the kids. Because as I learn, and we're going to go into one of the parenting myths here, not always is it your kids' behavior that is affecting you. And so I think, you know, maybe you might be looking at it going, well, I mean, drinking a couple shots, that's just me saying I'm not equipped to be a parent. Nay, nay, I say unto you.
At that moment.
Yeah, that's yes. And I think it makes you an uber-equipped parent, that at that moment you recognize, like, I'm just going to have a couple pops and I'm going to lighten up a little bit, and it's okay. And everything's going to roll off my back a little bit. But again, I'm also not the guy who thinks you shouldn't yell at your kids or say, hey, knock it off.
Same as popping a Xanax.
That's true. I might even be healthier. I don't know the research on that. Maybe I'll look into that. But anyway, let's take a quick break. Come back. Talk parenting myths with Dr. J. I never get tired of hearing Dr. J sing along with Huey Lewis now that I know.
I can't help it.
But it's also great because there's a slight delay. So it's so perfect and magical and joyful. I love it. I want a new drug, Huey Lewis in the news, as Dr. J is well aware. So I did this as a segment on Gary and Shannon. If you don't already know this, you can listen to from anywhere. If you're not in Southern California, you can listen to the Gary and Shannon Show Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific via the iHeartRadio app. And we do a parenting segment. And sometimes I share stuff that Dr. J has brought to me. Sometimes I find stuff on my own. The last time I talked to them, we did a whole thing about empty nest syndrome, because Gary Hoffman, who's also been on the show and is a host there, he's going to come on the show. He's got an 18-year-old who's moved out. And I'm kind of shocked at how he's dealing with it. And I can't wait to pick his brain. But the week before that, we did parenting myths. And we didn't get to all of them. And I wanted to save these topics to talk to you. This is the first one I got here is one that you've already covered with us long ago, but it's the, you'll catch a cold if you don't wear a jacket or if your hair is wet when you go outside and it's cold. And you say completely false. Yes, Dr. J.
Absolutely. Viruses cause colds. So not wearing a hat, not wearing a jacket. I mean, I live in Connecticut. It's 20 degrees outside, and every single 16, 17-year-old boy patient of mine comes into the office wearing shorts. Okay. So, I mean, I almost want to do a comedy fundraiser to buy long pants for teenage boys for the winter because they just don't have any sense about them. So they, yeah. And parents, most of these parenting myths are designed really so you can trick your kids into doing what you want them to do. Parents want their kids to wear a coat outside. They don't want them to go outside with, you know, with wet hair. So they tell them they're going to get sick. You know, but what I tell kids, if you keep biting your nails, you're going to get the stomach bug in your body and you're going to puke. Now, that's true. But coats and wet hair and stuff don't really have any bearing on it.
Yeah. And but here's the downside, I think, to using these kinds of myths is that I work with a 60-year-old guy who just got off having like the flu right after the holiday. Right. And I said he was talking about how he went outside and he was coughing at work. And he goes, I went outside and he goes, and I was wearing a jacket. He goes, but I felt that chill. And he goes, so I know it's coming. And I was like, how much of that, though? I didn't have the heart to say it because he's such a great guy. But I was like, I feel like that's all placebo, my man.
All I know is I can tell you the God's honest truth. A couple weeks ago when it was really, really cold in Connecticut, I'm walking from the car to the house, not a long time. And as I got to the door, I got a chill that knocked me the fuck off my feet, Justin. I have never had a chill go through my body so much. I got in the house. I could not get warm for like 30 minutes. I've still got my coat on. I'm under three blankets. I can't stop shaking. Wow. And I never got sick. But I had a horrible chill for 30 minutes.
Wow. Well, maybe I don't know. But here's and I found this and I know you already know this and have said this on the show. That's why I'm doing this one first. But a study in the New England Journal of Medicine found that kids who do not wear jackets did not get more sick than kids who did. And that they actually suggest, which is what Dr. J has been telling us for years, the best way to prevent a cold is actually frequent hand washing.
Yep.
The other thing I found, which is another thing that you've talked about on the show, is that 95% of respiratory infections are caused by viruses, which are not affected by antibiotics. The best way to deal with these is to let your body handle it naturally. Antibiotics are only helpful in infections involving bacteria, and they would need to take a culture to find that. There are theories that because people are asking for antibiotics to treat viral infections, that is creating super bacteria that can survive the antibiotics. Also, antibiotics can create problems for good bacteria that live in your gut. Yes, yes.
Yes. And oh, if I can just add something else, too, because it is flu season and there's a lot of people coming in demanding Tamiflu, which is an antiviral for the flu. Uh-huh. It's not the same as an antibiotic. I mean, you take an antibiotic and that literally kills the bacteria so that you get better. But Tamiflu doesn't kill the flu virus. It slows the replication of the flu virus so that you're going to shorten a 7 to 10 day flu to a 5 to 7 day infection. It's not going to go away quicker. Well, it's going to phase out quicker because you're slowing the replication. But you know how if you have strep throat, you take amoxicillin the next day, you feel better because the bacteria are getting killed. That's not the case with Tamiflu. So it's not – if you're 2-3 days into the flu, Tamiflu is useless. You know, it's already too late. So I just point that out because a lot of people, you know, kids who don't even have the flus, parents are coming in demanding Tamiflu because the news is making it out to be, you know, a horrible, horrible thing. And I really, you know, there have been 30 pediatric deaths in this country so far this year from the flu. And they say 85% of those 30 deaths are in kids that did not get the vaccine. So the first line of defense against the flu, at least, is to get those flu shots in the fall.
The other thing I learned is that, you know, the myth of whiskey being good for the common cold, not really a parenting thing, although I do think old days it was used a lot. I know my father, my grandfather, when my dad had a cold, would put him in a sleeping bag in his bed and then he would give him a shot of whiskey in a glass of milk and make him chug it and then sweat out his fever.
But, there you go. Yeah. It's just like swallowing Vicks Formula 44D.
Right. Yeah.
Feel the burn. Remember, that stuff was like 70% alcohol, so it's no different.
But there's actual research that says a hot toddy is a great cold remedy at home. And it's from your favorite source, Dr. J, WebMD. says that the common cold costs $40 billion a year. And there is scientific research that says a hot toddy helps with that and is more than just a home remedy like chicken soup. They say that the warm drink soothes a sore throat, and then the alcohol in the drink will also help with as a pain reliever.
And a cough suppressant.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. See? And if you want, I'll post on our Facebook page a recipe for a hot toddy, which involves boiling water to fill a mug, 4 cloves, a lemon twist, 2 teaspoons of demerara sugar or brown sugar. And I looked up what demerara sugar is, and it's basically a more raw form of sugar, where brown sugar is just sugar that is either colored brown or it's got some molasses on it. And then 1/4 ounce of fresh lemon juice, 2 ounces of bourbon, rye whiskey, Irish whiskey, or scotch. Pick your poison. Fill the mug with boiling water. Let's stand for a minute or two to warm. Meanwhile, stick the cloves in the lemon twist and set aside into the lemon twist. Oh, I see, to get like a flavor. And then empty the mug and fill it about halfway with fresh boiling water. Add the sugar and stir to dissolve. Add the prepared lemon twist and stir. Add the lemon juice and whiskey and stir again. There you go.
And by the time you're done making it, it'll be 3 days later and you'll be feeling better. So
see, it's a win-win no matter what.
Yeah.
The other
seems
one,
a little complicated to be making with a fever. You know, you're having fever dreams and you're trying to make a lemon twist and you're trying to find the special sugar. I can't see it going well.
Good point by you. Just put a couple teaspoons of sugar, some lemon juice, and some booze in a hot cup of water and you'll be fine. How about that? Is that better?
But in terms of whiskey for teething, you know, my kid's pediatrician used to say for teething to pour a shot of whiskey into a shot glass, put your finger in it, rub it on the baby's gums, then you drink the shot of whiskey and repeat it every 10 minutes for an hour and everyone will be asleep.
Well, that's another one that I have here, is that whiskey on the gums, good for teething. A study found that 1/3 of parents had heard of it, but only 1.9% admitted to trying it. It's an anecdotal evidence of it. There's only anecdotal evidence of it working. Let's see. The American Academy of Pediatrics is against it. Even as little as a teaspoon of whiskey can have serious effects on an infant because their developing livers do not process alcohol well.
No, I'm just kidding.
Why is everybody so uptight? Well, that's the thing I wanted to ask you. Obviously, you're going to agree that you're not supposed to be giving an infant some whiskey, but I think one of the reasons why I like having you on the show is you're a little more old school mentality. And so like a finger dip is never going to come near a teaspoon and rub it around. Right.
And it's probably, you know, if you're not giving it to sip and drink or putting it in their bottle, you know, it's probably harmless. But we also have Tylenol and Advil and Orajel and Ambisol. So there are options other than alcohol for treating your baby's teething.
And are more effective, right?
Right.
There's a tonic called gripe water that was developed in 1851 in England, and it contained about 3.6% of alcohol. The suggested dose to a 9-pound baby would be the equivalent of an adult throwing back 5 shots of booze. Parents didn't know because they weren't required to list ingredients back then for alcohol, and the alcohol wasn't removed from the recipe until the FDA shut them down here in the States. In what year would you guess, or do you know?
I don't know. It's probably only a couple years ago because it's still a popular product.
1993.
Yeah.
That's when the FDA said, hey, we do not condone this product. Now it is sold in alcohol-free form.
Right, but so it doesn't work.
I just love that. I love that when, you know, we think we know all this stuff and everything's going great and everybody's fine, everybody's being healthy, but because that feels like something that you would knock out in 1953, not 1993, right?
I mean, I don't think they took alcohol out of cough and cold medicines until right around there, too, because everything that had alcohol in it that made you fall asleep got replaced with Benadryl, which makes you fall asleep. Uh-huh. So, but like I said, Vicks Formula 44D when we were kids was, you know, half alcohol.
I think these are getting into more. Oh, wait, no, here's a non-deep cut. Swallow chewing gum stays in your stomach for 7 years.
Yeah, no. And swallowing watermelon seeds will cause a watermelon to grow in your belly. No, you know what's interesting is the body is very, very efficient at getting crap out of it. You know what I'm saying?
Literally.
We're really good at clearing things. I can tell you this much. My dog, Rodney. My daughter is having a popsicle and letting the dog lick the popsicle, and the dog swallows the whole thing, stick and all. And I can tell you that an intact full-size wooden popsicle stick takes 72 hours to transit the dog's intestinal system because I had to help it out 3 days later. No, gum doesn't get digested by the stomach. That's true, but lots of things don't get digested by the stomach, like pennies and nickels and batteries and other things that kids eat. But they pass through the intestines, are pretty good at getting it out of there. So as long as something doesn't get hung up in the esophagus, once it drops into the stomach, it's home free, and it's just going to pass with time. And usually it isn't that much time, believe it or not.
They said that if it's swallowed with foreign objects, it potentially could cause a blockage, but for the most part, right. Like you're just going to pass it.
I got a text the other night, Justin. It just says, child may have eaten an engagement ring. And I thought it was funny. It was like, it was a child swallowed, may have eaten
it.
Like he sat down with a napkin on stuck in his shirt and a fork and a knife and just decided he was going to eat the wedding engagement ring. So, and again, it has to pass, and it did. God bless him.
It all worked out.
Let's see, it works its way out. So gum doesn't stick around.
So here's one that I'm going to save that one for last. So now we're getting to some that I think are kind of more deep cuts, and feel free, like you're doing, if anything else that you have that pops up or if you don't think I'm going to hit it. This is one that was a big one for my mom. Let's do this one first. I'll do that one next. Reading in the dark is bad for your eyes or sitting close to the TV. How say you?
Well, if you are – I don't know. If you're squinting, and using other muscles to try to see the eye, to try to focus, then you're using other muscles that really are not used for seeing. It's just like if you pull a muscle in your leg, so you like to run, you run differently, you're going to overuse other muscles you don't usually use when you're seeing. So kids like to see, sit close to the TV because kids are more, nearsighted than farsighted when they're little.
Really?
So they can see things up close a little better. So sitting too close to the TV isn't going to harm their eyes. Reading in the dark usually isn't going to harm their eyes. But if they're squinting or they're having, using extra muscles in order to be able to see what they're seeing, well, yeah, then they might be straining things a little bit. But
and
more
that's
muscle
what causes
than
a headache,
eyes.
Right? That's what the, that's
it
what
can
it
cause
says.
A headache.
Yeah.
It can cause a headache, but not really change your eyes. I find most of the kids that develop problems with their eyes have parents who develop problems with their eyes in elementary school. I mean, a lot of times it's genetic almost to the day when kids will start having problems with their eyes. And it's just, the eye between like the ages of 6 and 13 kind of elongates front to back. Once you hit your regular puberty growth spurt, the eyes don't change all that much. So for kids who make it to 13 or 14 with good vision, they're usually going to make it into their 20s with good vision. Kids are either born with bad eyes, they develop bad eyes between, kindergarten and seventh grade, or they get old and, they develop problems with their eyes as they get into their 20s and 30s and so on.
See, and that's why we go to Dr. J, because in the stuff I found, it said that you can use, if you find that your kid wants to sit close to the TV a lot, that usually means that they are nearsighted and need to have their eyes checked or should have their eyes checked. But what you're saying is early on, kids are just
nearsighted,
period.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
And eat your carrots.
That's the next one I have here.
I was segueing for you.
You're the best. Carrots contain vitamin A, which help your vision. So that is a true thing. Other good sources of vitamin A are milk, cheese, egg yolk, and for the kid who loves liver. Because what kid doesn't?
Every kid loves liver.
Oh, it's for your eyes, kid. Enjoy.
And don't forget lutein. Because you see it on commercials now. They're selling lutein just as its own vitamin. But the problem is all of these things will keep your eyes healthy, but nothing will make your eyes better. So if your eyes have started to have problems, eating carrots isn't going to change anything.
Oh. It also, which I thought was interesting, said that artificial sweeteners can cause light sensitivity. Other things that could contribute to light sensitivity are antibiotics, oral contraceptives, blood pressure medications, diuretics, and diabetic medication. Does that jive with you, or you see that you say BS?
Yeah.
Okay, BS on that one. All right.
So I say again, eating carrots. We tell kids it's good for their eyes; they'll have good eyes. We do that again. It's a to bribe them to eat
carrots.
It's
a trick to eat them carrots. All right.
My Hungarian grandmother used to make these god-awful farina soup noodles, but she called them Superman noodles for me and my cousin, and we would eat that shit up, but they were grotesque.
I love this one. It says a nightlight. I never heard this. A nightlight in your kid's room will make them nearsighted. And what I found is that there's no evidence to support this. In fact, it's believed that a nightlight can help your infant learn eye coordination skills.
Yeah, I have never heard anything about a nightlight. And when kids are a little afraid at night, they get to be like, you know, 4 or 5 years old, they sometimes want a nightlight on. And I find that the nightlight sometimes will put shadows on the ceiling that make the kids even more scared. So you got to turn them upside down so the reflection's down, and then they can't see things shooting up on their ceiling. And the other thing is you got to – sometimes you just give a kid a flashlight and let them have control over the darkness so that if they're not having a problem, well, then they don't have the light on. But if they get a little frightened of something in the middle of the night, they know they can put the flashlight on and everything is fine. It gives them a little power over the darkness, you know.
That might be a good idea for, what was it, Andrew, who had the question about it with his kid being afraid. Like, just give him a flashlight that he could turn on and off or whatever. And
or just say, Alexa, nightlight on.
I love all these. That's another thing we should maybe talk about, at least for the laugh, is that it's funny that there's all these articles that I've seen lately coming out about kids making friends with Alexa, like, and whether or not that's healthy or not. Like, it never ceases to amaze me. And I'm not old enough to be able to have enough, I guess, credibility in this area, but it's always funny how every generation seems to have this thing that's going to ruin kids and that they kind of get up.
Well, I think we've come up with the thing, but go on.
And so, but then it comes around after you get through it that, hey, guess what? Rock and roll music never really did anything. TV never really did anything. Still going strong. What is it? Video games is the latest one. And now it's going to be things like Alexa and artificial intelligence, I imagine.
Right. Right. And what I mean, nobody's naming their kid Alexa anymore. That's for sure.
What if it has a resurgence eventually, though? How long before you think Alexa breaks into the top 10 of names?
Never.
It's done. Thank you. Jeff Bezos killed Alexa's forever. On that note, let's take another break and we'll come back and do more parenting myths with Dr. J. And some days pass on by. I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn, damn, girl. Damn, if you don't, I'm supposed to get a raise next week. You know that when I won't. And I'm working for a living, right? Working for a living. Working for a living, living and working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living. Working for a Living, Huey Lewis and the News, Dr. J's favorite band. Fair to say, favorite band or one of favorites?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's number one. It's the one that tickles that area of my brain that music is supposed to tickle. I don't know why. I don't know why. I know he's a punchline now because of 80s music, but I still go see him every time he's in Connecticut. God bless the man.
See, I love it. And that's one of the reasons why I decided that we'll just listen to Huey Lewis bumper songs every time we have Dr. J on, because I like it. I have the Greatest Hits album on my iTunes, and every once in a while I will have a craving for it. And it just kind of, it's a good, like, it's hard to be upset or sad or anything when you're listening, even like a ballad with him.
Yeah, my office staff knows that if I'm in a pissy mood, all they have to do is put on the Pandora Huey Lewis station, and it soothes the savage beast. I chill right the hell out.
You see a Dr. J, which, by the way, if you want to see a festive Dr. J, go to the Dad Podcast Instagram at Dad Podcast, and you can see him wish Merry Christmas to everyone, which is, I've seen it probably 40 times even since Christmas, and I love it. It makes me so happy. All right, so back to our parenting myths. This is one I heard, not necessarily from, maybe I heard it more from teachers than my parents, but it's the, your face will stick that way. So if you make a funny face and someone slaps you in the back or something like that, your face will be stuck that way. And what I found online is that it is false.
That is false. And it did happen in that movie One Crazy Summer, if you recall, though.
Oh, the... who was that that got that? That's
the
One Crazy Summer is the $2.
Someone hit them, then the faces stayed that way.
That's the movie where it's the paperboy going, $2. I want my $2.
That might be Better Off Dead, which is easily confused because they're both John Cusack movies. Okay.
All right.
So
I'll have to go back and revisit that.
Yeah, but no, there's no evidence. I've never, 25 years, it'll be this summer, I've never seen a child that got slapped on the back have their face stay that way. I have seen them swallow quarters and nickels after getting slapped on the back, though.
Well, it's in their mouth, yeah. What I found also is that it says there are a few neurological disorders that could cause temporary paralysis of the face or head in a certain position, but they are entirely involuntary. And I thought that it was interesting that some could be treated with Botox.
Very interesting. Right? The nerve is overreactive. You calm the nerve down. Yeah. But kids usually cross-eyed and, they call it strabismus, whether it's cross-eyed or whether they go out, is usually muscular. And by using prescription glasses, sometimes even surgery to change the position of the muscles, they're able to correct it. Sometimes it's due to neurological things, but most of the time it's just due to a weak eye muscle in one of the eyes. And then there's another thing that's normal called Duane syndrome, which is one of the eyes doesn't turn in. So when they look in a certain direction, it kind of stays in the center while the other one looks all the way over to the left. So it looks like their eyes are crossing, but they just don't have the muscle that brings the other eye in to the center.
Like Kevin Pollak's Columbo impression?
Yeah, and I was reading this article, and I was going to Google what the hell is up with Forrest Whitaker's eyes and find out how that poor man had that issue there. But I couldn't find anything. Couldn't find a damn thing.
I like your Google phrases. I want to get you either an OK Google or an Alexa. Like, hey, Google, what the hell is up with Forrest Whitaker's eyes?
I like that I can say that right into the microphone. My research for the parenting myths, I just said into Google. I just said, will your face stay that way if you cross your eyes? And it comes right up, all the articles. It's great.
I want to maybe we should do that as some fun videos, is questions Dr. J asks Google. What does Dr. J Google? And maybe we could submit it to Google for their, because now they're doing the thing. Hey, Google, what does a whale sound like? Or how big is a whale? All those. I'll tell you this much.
Alexa won't answer those questions for you.
Damn right.
Alexa is really dumb when it comes. I just wanted to know, how many wins Ron Guidry had total. And Alexa says, I do not know that information. I said, what good are you for instead of listening in on me and turning my lights on and off?
Maybe you get an OK Google and then you pit them against each other. So you ask one the question and then you see if Google can find it.
Clearly, Alexa would lose in an instant. I know how to say turn on living room lights, and then it says I didn't understand what you said. What good are you? What?
Wait, are both Google and the Alexa? Are they both chicks?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I want to say one of them's a dude. It's going to be great if the dude is better.
And I think my ex-wife took over my GPS lady because she sends me into areas of New York that you would be scared to death to drive through. But,
I don't care if it makes me sexist, but I don't know what it is. They've got to have research that shows that we find women's voices more soothing or something. But and it's not about the woman telling me what to do like I've joked before, but I always change it to a guy. Like my Siri is a dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a possibility.
Yeah. You go to your settings. I mean, we'll talk about it offline and I can help you if you want.
Well, maybe we can have another podcast on teaching me to use my iPhone.
We can do lots of spin-offs. I have a network now. This is what my mom always told me. She said, don't eat standing up. It's bad for you. Do you know? Have you ever heard anything about this?
I have not heard that. And you know what? That is the one question I didn't get around to asking Google.
Yeah.
So. I honestly don't know. I eat standing up at my my little island in the kitchen. I usually have a guest and they're on the other side sitting and I stand. I always stand when I'm eating. I have no idea why. I find my strategy is if I'm sitting down, then there's a chance I'm going to spill something on my pants as well. If I'm standing, then I just have to worry about my shirt getting fouled.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think of that.
About laundry, Justin.
That's true. See, this
I
is...
order food at a restaurant. I order it by what one is most likely to fall upon me and make a mess.
This is why we talk to Dr. J about these things, because you always have a fun take on it. Because what I found is that there's no official research on sitting eating or standing eating. They said that gravity does not aid in the digestive process. But if you eat standing up, you are more likely to rush, which is not good. Like if you don't chew your food enough, and they even went into examples of, how you could, if you're seeing whole bits of food in your stool, it means you're not chewing enough. And that could be hard on your gut, I guess.
That would be a Bristol 4, I think.
Oh, look at that. By the way, the amount of times I spend checking that chart, it's at facebook.com/dadpodcast on my deuces now. Is this gut thing that I went through has got me so worried about my gut health, and so I'm constantly checking my shit now. It's embarrassing. I shouldn't have said that out loud. Here's what I liked about this on the same subject, that there is research that finds that if you eat laying down, like the Greeks did, that can be good for you. If you lay on your left, it reduces pressure on your stomach, which is helpful during a feast.
That's where the stomach helps it empty from the stomach if you're on your left side.
And if you eat laying down, you process carbs slower, which is helpful because carbs cause your insulin to spike. But eating laying down during or within 2 hours of eating could cause acid reflux, is what it said.
God damn, I know that's to be true.
do you like to eat in the bed sometimes?
I got a big jug of Tums on my nightstand.
Yeah. My mother-in-law's doing an inhaler that's, I guess, supposed to help her with her acid reflux, which I thought was weird. That's wild.
That is. I have not heard that.
But maybe I'm reading the medicine wrong then. What's the other one here? Oh, it takes more muscles to frown than smile.
Wrong. Another one that's used to trick kids into believing stuff that's not true.
What I like is I like to think that, you know, Us Weekly or People Magazine or somebody paid a plastic surgeon, because a plastic surgeon once counted the muscles and on a small smile takes 10 and a frown is only 6, while a full smile takes 12 and a full frown takes 11.
11, exactly. Yeah. So it's, again, something to get your kid not to have that puss face on, I guess.
Yeah. You know what I did like? I had a math teacher. I've always liked the way he said this, because I obviously am a talker. And what he said was, you know, you have 2 ears and 1 mouth, so you would listen twice as much as you talk, which I think is in the same vein of, you know, it's harder to frown than it is to smile. But I always like that. Even when he was telling me to shut up, I was like, oh, I like that. I like that.
It's a nice way of telling you to shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Now, this is by far my favorite one. And I actually shared this with another MD at one of these diabetes seminars that I'm about to go to as soon as I'm done here.
Uh-huh.
And he called BS.
All right.
And until I said where I got this information from, sugar makes your kids hyper. Here's where I think that they're going to delineate this, because basically what they said is that they did a study that found that kids having sugar had no effect on their behavior, but they did find that kids having sugar made parents more sensitive to their behavior.
Yes.
So, and this comes from this is from the New England Journal of Medicine, because he goes, I'd like to see where that study came from. And I said, the New England Journal of Medicine. And he kind of had a like, well, shit. I go, why? Is that like the Inquirer of? He goes, no. He goes, that's like one of the most reputable medical journals out there. So you are more sensitive as a parent because you want to blame it. And trust me, the same mom who made me turn off Pet Sematary would always wig out when she was getting tired at the end of the day. And she said, you have too much sugar.
Right. Or you didn't get a nap today. We feel our kids' behavior. There has to be some underlying explanation that explains why they're doing this. And most of the time, it's just because they're kids, you know? But sugar generally doesn't do anything other than change the parents' expectations of behavior. That's all.
Isn't that great? Isn't that funny?
Yeah. And I hear it every day. I mean, at my office, sugar, red dye, you know, every time they touch a pretzel, they can't breathe. You know, I mean, you would not believe.
Touch a pretzel.
I mean, let me tell you this. This is a funny one. The other day, had a 15-year-old girl come in because they had the scoliosis check at school, and it was the nurse thought it was a little off, so they asked the kid to come in so I could look and measure it. So my nurse says, Dr. Sute will be in a second. Just put this gown on. So I go. I knock on the door. I open the door. I walk in the room. She's got the gown on over all of her clothes, Justin.
Whoops.
I don't know. Sometimes I'm just wondering, am I doing a good enough job?
Yes. I mean, well, here's the thing. You didn't immediately start screaming at this kid, right?
No, I just went, I can't see through your clothes. So can you take the clothes off and put the gown on? And I went out and came back in. But do we really have to spend? It's like the kid who peed in the toilet with his urine sample and just scooped the cup out of the toilet and put it in the pass-through. I mean, do we need to go through a checklist of how to do these things now for people?
You know, I have an embarrassing paper gown story, and then we'll see if there's any other parenting myths you have before we wrap up here. But the when I went to get my vasectomy, I go in there and there was a paper gown all folded up, and they said put the gown on and remove all your clothes and set them here. They said if you worry about your feet getting cold, you can leave your socks on. Right. So I said okay. So I unfold the paper gown. And I talk about this on one of my comedy albums, and I put the thing on, and it had like a slit in it at about the level of my crotch.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this, and I've seen operating shows where, you know, they want to isolate the area. So put my fruit basket in the slit. And then, of course, the way that this room is oriented is the lady. This is a horrible layout. It's not fun.
Didn't you notice it fit a little awkwardly around the neck?
Here's the thing. I remember. No, what I do remember, though, is I do remember that I ripped it a little bit, which made me masculinely proud. Like, I was like, yeah, that's right. I'm better than average. But I was putting all of my junk up in it. You know what I mean?
Lifts and separates.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and the way it works out is the way that you're laying, you're facing the door. So when the door opens, my kibbles and bits and everything are right down this long hallway. And so the lady comes into the room, and I'm sitting there holding a fruit basket with no hands, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. And she kind of gives me a look, and I said, oh, I found the slit or whatever. And she was like, because I could tell she was looking at me, and she goes, oh, and then she didn't know what to do, and she didn't want to overreact, but she goes, that was probably just a rip, actually. And I went, oh.
Yeah, I'm isolating the area for the surgery.
Yeah, I thought I was being helpful, and it was, I guess, it just was a poorly placed, because it looked clean. I guess somebody, maybe when they hit it with the...
looked like it was put there, factory made.
Yes, yeah, I was like... I was so embarrassed. So embarrassed. It was awful. So that's why. So do you have any other parenting myths that have come up while we're talking about this, or anything that pops into your brain? I feel like we did a good gambit of them.
Yeah. You know, I'm speaking of sugar too. I mean, just, it comes up a lot with teenagers that too much sugar makes your acne worse. Fatty foods make your acne worse. And again, none of those things are true. They're just tactics to get teenagers not to eat too much sugar or greasy foods.
So. Now is really the best case, the treatment for acne is the, is just like hand washing in a cold. It's just face washing.
Soap and water, if you can get the bacteria. If you're a young kid starting with pimples, usually all you need to do is soap and water twice a day, and maybe something like an Oxy-10 wipe or something once a day to kill the bacteria. But as they get older, then the secretions from the face as they go through puberty and after puberty get a little more sticky and oily. So sometimes you need a medication like Retin-A or Differin, which is now even over the counter. And that helps to break down the keratin and the grease and oil in the pores, and helps the pores to breathe a little bit. So at the beginning, though, it's usually hygiene, and then it becomes hygiene and clogged pores as they go through and finish up puberty. So, you know, kids usually 13 to 19 are going to have problems. But if they, you know, I call it body maintenance. You know, I would say, how are we doing with body maintenance? You're brushing your teeth twice a day, washing your face with soap and water, visiting the feet with soap every once in a while. You know, I mean, that's my 12-year-old checkup there. You know, I got to go over that stuff with the kids, because there is no more disgusting human being on this earth than like a 14-year-old boy. I mean, they just don't. And I have kids who come in with acne. I want to put them on Accutane, for God's sake, and that doesn't bother them. And I can't get them to wash their face twice a day if it's not a problem to them. You know,
I've got to get a second bathroom put on this house for my poor wife. And it's funny because we started to talk about your recommendation of just starting with their 10, wearing deodorant and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I started talking to Natalie, and I told Jacob, I go, well, next year he's going to start wearing deodorant. And Jacob was like, why? And I said, well, the doctor that I am on the podcast says, if I start you doing it now, it'll get you into the routine so that when you get like 12, 13, you start to actually stink. It'll just be a part of your routine and we won't have to address it. So now the motherfucker does a spritz of my cologne in the morning. because he wants to smell good. And I'm like, this is
walking
like,
around with Axe in his backpack.
Well, that's here's the thing. It's I realize why Axe is a thing and popular amongst the teenage boys now. It's because I don't want him using up my 60. I don't even know. My wife always gets it for me for Father's Day about every other year or every year.
What's your scent?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, it's a it's not obsession. It's something. It's one of those types of words where it's like I always laugh in my head because it's like intense orgasm by Calvin Klein. It's, it's like one of those. Like it's I think it's Euphoria. I want to say Euphoria or something. And then I just finished that one. And then there's another one that she has that I think is like Black and White or something by Dolce & Gabbana.
She gets the fan. I'm a cool water guy. I like that stuff. I want to smell like the beach.
She does too. And but she didn't get. She got me. I used to have cool water a long time ago. And I think
and Yankee cologne too, because you smell like a champion. Those are my 2 cents. New York Yankees cologne smell like a champion.
Again, go to Dad Podcast, the Dad Podcast Instagram, and look at Dr. J's Christmas video. It's so great. I'm so glad you sent that to me. But anyway,
yeah.
So I don't know what it is, but I just don't like him using the expensive one. I would rather, you know, get him. But I don't want my kid to be a douche and use the Axe. So I'll figure something out.
Yeah, but, you don't want to, you know, I remember I was in junior high school. I believe I got for Christmas, like when I was 12, something called Mon Triomphe. I don't even know what it was. Some kind of French thing. It probably my grandmother got it at Caldor or something. And the most horrible. It was, I think its claim to fame was it mixed with your smell to make a unique smell all its own.
Oh, I got one when I was probably 15 or 16. I remember because I paid for my own cable in my room. I was watching a late night thing where you could, it was basically, it had pheromones in this cologne. And I bought that. And I remember, but I would use it very sparingly because it was like a limited time offer. And it was probably just total horseshit. But
part
of
the Bill Cosby collection.
Exactly. Well played. Oh, all right, Dr. J. A pleasure as always. Don't forget you can visit him at standuppediatrician.com. He's at Dr. J. Sute on the Twitter as well. And you can all of the.
Oh, by the way, yeah. I am now a Patreon subscriber to the Dad Podcast. And I wanted to say that because I, really want to support this podcast, and I suggest other people do too. So maybe we can do more fantastic things with it.
Here's the thing: I set up the Patreon. I got an email from somebody, and they suggested Patreon. And I remember this is a couple years ago where I did it, and where I even was doing the PayPal thing. And nobody seems to be. I did a survey, and everybody seems to prefer commercials rather than doing a pay-to-play thing. And so,
I just think it supports the artist. That's what I do. I have 3 comedian friends whose shows I listen to and do. And you know what the heck? If $5 a month isn't going to break anybody, but it can add up. You know?
Yeah. No. And that's the thing. If I could get everybody downloading this show to do $2 a month, this becomes my gig. But I need it. But I think what we're in a mindset, and I don't disagree with it, but I just feel like people, like even a friend of mine who likes listening to this show, she goes, I don't pay for things, like kind of a thing. Yeah. And I get that. I'm a guy who I pay for Never Not Funny every once in a while when I jump back into that show. But yeah, if everybody paid $2, this would be my gig. I think I want to come up with like a premium episode. So we do the regular weekly episode, and then we have the monthly episodes with you and Rachel and Kyle.
Right.
And then I would do like a secondary episode each week if I could do that. But I got to create a better way to give it out, because when I was doing the premium episodes before, it was too hard to give out. I was also still working full time. It was bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Well, you know me. I'm willing to help in any way whatsoever. We got to get what was the other thing we talked about was having like a weekend comedy show seminar type of thing. We got to get that going. And I mentioned the Dad Podcast at all of my shows. So hopefully we're building up some Connecticut listeners, too. So.
I'm sure we are. But listen, everybody loves Dr. J. I love Dr. J. I appreciate you. Again, all of the social media handles for this show. So if you want to hit me up on Twitter, I got an email from somebody at the iHeart station, and she apologized, but she was like, I reached out to you and you didn't respond back, and maybe this is why you don't have as many followers as you could, blah, but you have to connect with your fans. And I took an offense to it because I was like, I respond to everybody. Like the only one I'm kind of bad at, unless you send it through the Facebook page, Dad Podcast, is Facebook Messenger for my personal Facebook. That I very rarely pick up on or get alerts, but if any message or anything like that, I make it a point to respond because I'm so appreciative not only of you taking the time to listen, but taking the time to say hey or ask a question, any of that stuff. So, but yeah, hit me up if you want to say hi on Twitter or talk to me. Do the same thing again at Dr. Jay Soute on Twitter for him. And I think that's about it. So on behalf of Dr. Jay, this is Justin Worship saying hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.